Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. The acclaimed Unmar Warehouse production Blindness is now being presented at the Darryl Roth Theater in Union Square in New York City through July 25th. The special theatrical presentation is based on Nobel Prize winner José Saramago's dystopian novel of the same name. The adaptation is by Tony Award-winning playwright Simon Stevens. In the piece, as in the novel, an epidemic of unexplained complete vision loss takes over the city, and the government responds by placing and ultimately neglecting newly blind citizens in abandoned buildings. But one unaffected woman witnesses the prisonership and frees one group of newly blind citizens who've been locked in an empty mental hospital.
And then the time had come to decide what we wanted to do. There was no water. There was no electricity. If there was a government, it was a government of the blind trying to rule the blind. I didn't know if there was going to be a future. We needed to decide how we were going to live. I told my companions that if we stayed together, we might manage. If we separated, we would be swallowed up by the masses. I told them, my companions, that we should live together, that they should come with me, they should come to our house, we should live there. And they said that they would.
No actors are present for performances of Blindness. Instead, audience members wear headphones and listen to the recorded narration by actor Juliet Stevenson while surrounded by immersive lighting and atmospheric design. Juliet Stevenson was awarded the CBE for her work in drama and has received the Laurence Olivier Award for Best Actress. Her film credits include, but are not limited to, Truly Madly Deeply, Mona Lisa Smile, Being Julia, and Bend It Like Beckham. Juliet Stevenson, thank you so much for being with us.
I'm very happy to be with you.
So as an actor, would you mind sharing with me how your pandemic personally started before we speak about Blindness and how the project came to your plate? What happened for you when COVID-19 started shutting everything down?
Oh, so I was doing a show in London called The Doctor by the wonderful, it's a play by Schnitzler, rewritten by the wonderful Robert Icke and directed by him. He's actually in New York at the moment directing a play. But and we had done a run at the Armida in London, and then we had taken it to the Adelaide International Theatre Festival. So I was in Adelaide, and we had 3 weeks there, and then we flew home expecting the following week to go into the West End with a show, and then I was coming to Broadway, actually, on my own, but with an American company to do the play there later on in the year. So I flew back across the world from Australia thinking, why is everybody wearing masks in every airport and every... I was kind of a little bit out of it. I think Australia was perhaps a little slow to catch up, or certainly Adelaide was. And then... And was realizing as I flew across the world, maybe there's something that I'm not quite tuning into. And when I got back to London, of course, within a day or two, we were told that the West End run was cancelled. And 3 days later, I was sort of in retreat in the country with my husband. So there we stayed because he has a health condition, which means he had to really shield. And so, you know, we thought a couple of months and that turned into four. And then, of course, eventually it was a year. So we grew a lot of vegetables then. It was a very sad year of work to lose because it's a most fantastic play and very, very relevant to our time. So, you know, there are some years I wouldn't be heartbroken to lose the work, but last year was a very, very big year, and I was coming to Broadway for the first time in a straight play. So I was very excited about that as well. But, you know, maybe it will happen. There is some talk of it happening again. And then in the middle of the year, in summer, in July, this opportunity to do Blindness in the middle of lockdown came up. And so, yeah, that was a wonderful sort of release from captivity back into the world, just for a couple of weeks, into the world of making theatre.
And speaking of Blindness, how were you approached to be a part of it? What did you understand the work would entail, since it is such a unique experience?
Well, actually, strangely, for a play that's about a pandemic, we had started working on it when, you know, way before, in 2019, when nobody had heard of COVID-19. The National Theatre here in London has a workshop, a sort of studio, where they you know, try out new writing and workshop new writing and so on. It's sort of a greenhouse for new plays and upcoming writers. And we had workshopped the play for a week with a full cast of about, you know, 30 actors. which is what the story on the face of it would require. Mm-hmm. And I, at the end of that, we showed the work and some people were interested in producing it, but it was going to be a very expensive show, big cast, big sort of ambitious piece. So some West End producers said, yeah, we love it, but we can't afford it right now. And anyway, cut a long story short, Simon Stephen is the writer who adapted it from the novel. The novel is by a wonderful Portuguese writer called José Saramago. But Simon Stevens, my friend, the playwright, said, well, I'm going to rewrite it as a one-woman show then. If people say it's, you know, it's too expensive, I'm going to write it. And I said, God, it's a huge tapestry of characters, and how are you going to do that? He went away, and miraculously, about 3 months later, still 2019, we did a reading for his agent, and it works kind of brilliantly. So then we thought, okay, well, we'll look for a way of doing this, perhaps with a chorus of dancers or something, but, you know. And then, of course, COVID happened and everything shut down, so that was the end of that. And then sometime around this time last year, actually, just end of May, beginning of June, I got a call from him saying, listen, what would you feel about doing Blindness as a recorded theatrical event, just you recording it using this extraordinary technology, binaural sound, you know, which is sort of three-dimensional sound. And I said, wow, I don't know, do we want to mix it in the middle of lockdown? Who will come, you know, and isn't it one we're going to miss an opportunity? If we do it now, then we will have done it and we won't be looking for a proper production later on. And he said, no, I don't think so. We could just do this now. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I said yes, because I thought it's a way of getting that theatre open and getting its doors open and reminding the world that theatre still exists when everything had been shut for about 3 months. And so, well, nothing to be lost here. Let's just do what we can. So we met in this deserted London. You know, Soho was completely empty, sort of dystopian, strange London. And we gathered in this room nervously with our masks on, you know, and had 1 week in which to find a way of creating the show in this form. And it was the most intense week of my working life, I think. I really think I've never known anything. It was so intense. It was fantastic. We didn't know how to make it. We didn't know what we were doing. And so we had to find out everything. And it was just a joy.
Could you zoom in on that a little bit and tell me what about such an intense week of work made it so joyful?
Well, I think the collaboration, I love collaboration more than anything. And these days I'm always looking for collaborators. And it's not even so much what I'm going to be working on or what role I'm going to be playing, but who I'm going to be working with has become the most important thing for me. Because if you're working with people with whom you can really take off, you know, you can really share and share a language and share maybe a value system about how, what kind of theatre you want to make, it's just so exciting. And Simon is an old sort of friend, and the director, Walter Meyer Johan, I didn't know, but we just sort of clicked. We had sort of clicked in that week at the National Theatre 6 months before. So what was exciting was we had this sound system called binaural sound, which is basically that there is a sort of fiberglass head with two microphones buried inside. It looks just like a human head. And you work with it just like you would with a human being, and it's just recording everything you say and do. It can be, you know, 6 foot in the air. You can hold it in your arms like a child. You can lie it down on a bed. It basically records what you're doing in 360 degrees. So it's extraordinary quality. For people going to see the show in New York, they'll have this extraordinary sense. You are in the room with the character. She is there. She's running around. You can hear her. She's crossing the room. She's leaning out the window. She's crawling into a courtyard. She's coming back. She's whispering in your ear. It's extraordinary technology.
I wish you could see what everybody looks like in the night. It looks like a hospital ward from the bottom of the world. And the sounds that they make. The murmuring. I wonder if I'll go blind one of these days. There's no reason why I haven't. It makes no sense. I'm nobody special. It could happen at any second.
But we didn't know how to make that work. We had to learn how it worked, then learn what one by one, what each scene required of it and how we told the story. You know, there's one scene, for example, where I'm trying to keep a whole huge crowd of people out of the room to protect the little tribe of people that I'm looking after, the blind who I'm looking after, and there's people kind of come into our ward in the deserted hospital. And I had to kind of create the impression of a crowd of people coming in and trying to keep them out and building a barricade, and it's all like chaotic. And there was only me.
Right.
But yes. I discovered by hurling, I saw this whole bunch of chairs at the side of the room. I said, what happens if I hurl these chairs across the room, one after the other? So they crash and bang, and then I shove them all up against the wall together. And let's hear what that sounds like with this technology. So we tried that in the room with me screaming and shouting at these people to keep out, keep out. And that sound kind of composition, when we played it back, was really exciting. And your imagination, the listener can think, oh, yeah, I can hear people. I'm sure there are people coming. I can hear her resistance to them coming in. I can hear the noise she's making to keep them out. And therefore, the rest of the story is sort of peopled by the imagination of the listener. It's fascinating technology. So it was thrilling that week because we had to learn all this and record the whole play in 5 or 6 days. So, you know, it was very exciting because we none of us had done this before.
You mentioned the audience's imagination filling in the world as they listen to the recorded piece. How much did you need to visualize, or how much did you imagine as you performed it to get yourself into the emotional highs of specific moments?
Yes, totally, totally. I mean, I am such a lover of radio as a medium. I think it's probably my favorite medium, and I think it's so challenging for an actor. It's certainly not an easy option, which I think it's sort of, there's a cliche that radio is easier to do as an actor. I don't think so, because you have to remember that the audience can't, you know, everything is happening inside the audience's imagination, everything visual. So you've got a huge amount of storytelling to do just with the voice. And by definition, it's radio. So when you're doing that as an actor, you have to try to imagine what they can and can't see and try and supply lots more, that kind of fills in all the gaps for them. And I had to do that when I was working on this. So I had to imagine I was leading a large group of blind people, newly blind people, freaking out, new to lacking sight, not yet with the skills of the visually impaired, in a crazy world which is spinning into chaos and anarchy, inside a deserted asylum, as it is, and so where they've been imprisoned, they've been put away because of the contagion factor. They've been put away in this deserted asylum outside the town, and they're guarded by these troops. And it descends into a sort of Lord of the Flies situation. So there was a very rich, crazy world to imagine, a place, people who were. And I was alone in the room with this small team of creatives. It was just me. So there was lots imagining to do. But I think, you know, that's what I love. I mean, a play is called a play because you, as Peter Brook says, you know, you play. It's like what kids do. They dress up and they imagine themselves in a situation and they play with each other and they believe they're in it, whatever it is. And that's what we do as actors. And in that situation, it was kind of bliss in a way because I had to imagine everything. It was like I was just, you know, a kid with a whole lot of new toys and just me to play with them, you know, playing all the parts, having to imagine everything and then just staying in that world, not having to leave it, just staying inside it. And then we'd record a scene and then we'd play it back, listen to it with our eyes closed. And then we'd ask ourselves, is the story being told there? Are we telling the story there? How could we improve that? How could we add another ingredient or another element that would make it more complex, more interesting, richer for an audience? And so, yeah, it was all about the imagination, really.
Juliet Stevenson narrates Blindness, which is now running at the Daryl Roth Theater in Union Square in New York City. Juliet, thank you very much for talking about the project with me, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Blindness, adapted from José Saramago's novel by Simon Stevens and featuring Juliet Stevenson, is running at the Daryl Roth Theater in Union Square in New York City through July 25th.
I could tell you of the things that happened in the time between then and now. Of the way we explored the city looking for the places where my companions lived and the people we found there and the stories they told. I could talk about the churches and the way they had been left, and the banks and the way they'd been left, and the hospitals and the way they had been left, and the art galleries and the theatres and the cinemas and the football stadia, and the early shapes of public conversations, and the way people moved, and the way people died.
To learn more, visit blindnessevent.com. That link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable.